For over 35 years now, Carol Joy Side has helped families homeschool with her literature-based approach to education. Over the last 5 years especially, Carol, along with our team and board members, have worked together toward the next chapter of Homeschool Made Simple and what the ministry will look like for the next generation. We're excited to share a ministry update with you and invite you to partner with us in a new way. You're listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. This is a podcast to help you homeschool simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably. The whole Homeschool Made Simple team is on the episode today, including myself, Rachel Winchester, and Carol Joy Side and JJ Side. Before we get into the episode, I'd love to invite you to join us in 2026 at one of our regional seminars. All three of us will be there, and we always enjoy meeting you face to face. There will be like-minded families, books brought by our friends at Yellow House Story Shop, and a new option for breakouts. You can learn more at homeschoolmadesimple.net/seminars. Now let's get into the episode.
Greetings to all you listeners. JJ Side here with my mom, Carol Side, and with Rachel Winchester. If we've had the pleasure of meeting at one of the regional seminars, hello to you again. If we haven't met, greetings to you here in the U.S., and we even have listeners across the world. And we're recording today with a special announcement that Homeschool Made Simple has actually transitioned into a 501c3. Homeschool Made Simple is now a nonprofit Christian ministry. And many of you, as you're hearing that, may think to yourself, well, I've sort of thought of Homeschool Made Simple that way all along. And in a sense, that's true. We've certainly never tried to get rich off of this, but it has, in a sense, been a small cottage industry business for many decades. And the desire has always been to serve families and to equip them to disciple their kids. And so, of course, we've done our best to not overcharge for anything, to not create financial barriers or put obstacles in the way of families who need this information and need the training and equipping that will serve them. And so, of course, nobody's gotten rich off of this, but it's been a business. And now it's a nonprofit. And so we wanted to spend some time today announcing that to you all and then sharing a little bit of our heart as to why we made this decision. Made this shift. It goes back to a phone call that I had with my mom a couple years ago where we realized if the vision of this ministry was going to, in essence, live even into the season where she transitions into more of a founder's role, then a nonprofit status was probably necessary. And there are a lot of factors that go into that we'd love to unpack with you. But we're certainly realizing that this message is becoming more and more timely as time goes on. I think of Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, and how an atheist sociologist writes a New York Times bestseller last year that in many ways is pleading with people to consider the things that this ministry has been talking about for decades. And so we really are in this unique time where we are experiencing the mainstreaming of ideas that used to feel radical or fringe or crunchy or whatever you want to call it. And now people are going, man, I think kids really need to go outside. And I think screens and social media are really bad for our kids. And I really think people need to read to kids. And I really think people need to spend time with their kids. So it's sweet to be living in a time where everybody is going, hey, I don't think this is radical or weird or judgmental to talk about these things. And so now you have parents who homeschool and even parents who don't homeschool, parents of devout Christian faith and even parents who don't share our faith, who are asking hard questions about how do you live this way? How do you raise your kids in such a way that they'll flourish? And they're desperately seeking answers. So there's never been a better time for us to reach those people and offer them real help as they try to raise their kids in a way that will lead those kids to flourish. So Mom, I'd love to hear from you as you think about this transition. What excites you about it? What are some of the things that you hope it will free you up to do as the founder of this ministry? And what does this mean for the future of Homeschool Made Simple?
Great question. I guess what I've seen, JJ and Rachel, in the homeschool movement is when the founders went on to glory, their ministries really never recuperated from that loss. There was no continuum for their message. And before Dr. Moore died, he told one of my clients, Carol Joy's Side is the only one who gets it right, meaning I guess that he felt like I was carrying on his mantle, but it was nothing official. He never asked me to do that. I mean, we were close friends, but there wasn't a succession plan. There wasn't, you know, how do we take this to the next generation? And the same thing when John Holt died. So sometimes when we see a really great founder leave, you know, the planet, we're left with who's gonna keep this on? And the answer very often is, well, you know, Susie and Harry were supposed to do it, but they don't have the same gifting, or they weren't known by the followers. Like, you know, they were kind of in the background being a support system, but they didn't have the kudos to keep this thing alive. They didn't have the following. They weren't a known entity. So my dream is for you and Rachel and other people that we're going to be raising up, coming alongside while I'm still alive and mentoring you guys and cheering for you. And then also the things that you bring to the table that add, you know, I feel like you both add so much value to the ministry, and we will be adding probably other people in the next few years as well. So we're more of a team ministry instead of a one-man band. And so that gives me great joy and satisfaction to see that already starting to take root. And then, of course, financially, all the vision and expansion that our board has and that the three of us have, those things, some of them are going to be somewhat expensive. We've always been a low-cost automobile. You know, we're not a flashy thing. Dr. Moore used to sit on trains and wait till people got off and then pick up their Wall Street Journal and read it so he didn't have to buy a newspaper. Like, I was raised by someone who, his wife would show me her beautiful shoes and she'd say, I got these at the thrift store. They were $3 and they were like super expensive shoes, you know? And so I say all that to say, we've always been a lean, mean machine, always, as a ministry. And we want to continue to do that. But we have some dreams that we share with Martin Luther King Jr. We have a dream, and our dream is we want to do things that will take us into the next generations. And so we're inviting people to partner with our ministry. If this ministry has been a blessing to their family, if they believe in our message, if they want to see it continue, then we're like, come on board and join us as a team. And it's tax deductible if you invest in the ministry now. So we went to the expense and the trouble of doing this because we wanted to kind of remove any barriers for people to invest in the ministry that we ourselves are investing in it. So we're not asking anyone to do something we ourselves have not done. And so we're just saying, come and join the party with us.
JJ Side here with a fantastic new resource from our ministry partner, Crossway Books, a little series called Big Theology for Little Hearts, a series of board books I'm holding in my hands entitled Creation, the Church, and God. Listen to just a few sentences from the title, God. God is good, and all he does, God is right and good. Loving, God is committed to his people and loves them with a never-ending love. Glory, all things were made to praise and glorify God. These are fantastic little board books with beautiful illustrations, rich theology. You can pick up the books in the Big Theology for Little Hearts series wherever books are sold, or visit crossway.org/bigtheologyforlittlehearts to learn how to get 30% off with a free Crossway Plus account. JJ Side here. One of my favorite resources that we use in our home, CTC Math. The founder, Pat Murray, is an award-winning math teacher, a dad of 10 himself. He teaches the concepts really simply and concretely and quickly. He makes it fun. He gets your kids moving quickly through the lecture into practicing and learning on their own. It's definitely removed a lot of the tears and the tension out of math in our house. There's even a 50% discount for homeschool families. You can go to ctcmath.com to learn more.
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this as we've worked through this process. It's obviously not simple or straightforward for anyone who's done it. Working with the IRS, gathering a board of wonderful trusted leaders from across the country to serve on our board, and thinking deeply through the values of this ministry and why this ministry needs to carry on.
In a minute, Rachel, I'm going to kick it to you, and I'd love to hear you talk about how this transition may open up opportunities for you to do more of the things you love and are good at. And what people may not realize is how many years you and my mom have worked together. And in a sense, it's this great gift. We're not scrambling here in the 11th hour, but actually you and my mom are deeply aligned in your values and your passion. You know, you answer the same questions in the same ways in the best sense. And so I know, Mom, you're not worried because you feel like you have spiritual sons and daughters who carry the DNA of this ministry and understand what matters most, and that allows you to relax in some ways. So in a second, Rachel, I'd like you to talk about your hopes for that as it relates to your role. But as I've tried to distill down what I think matters most as we make this transition, I think it probably boils down to this fascinating dynamic where there are far more people who would be passionately embracing this philosophy that don't know about this philosophy. And so the people that we serve, we're so grateful to serve. And yet we're also painfully aware that there's, in a sense, a ceiling on our reach. We haven't wanted to lose our way or lose our identity by sort of, you know, turning it into a money-making machine so that we could napalm the world with our message. And so in that sense, we've had a relatively limited audience. We have relationships that stretch back decades with families where now, you know, you're receiving thank you notes and text messages from people who were raised under this philosophy and are now deciding to homeschool their own kids in this philosophy and have circled back to say thank you because they're making the connections of how, in many ways, this ministry helped redirect the course of the way their parents raised them and is now informing the way in which they're raising their own children. So we're grateful for that kind of multi-generational legacy that we're increasingly hearing come back to us as it relates to what you've done for people over the years. And so I'm realizing that probably the greatest thing for us to celebrate in this transition is the opportunity for more people to hear without putting massive financial barriers in front of people, you know, doubling the price of seminars or something bizarre so that we could expand the message. But instead, knowing that there are people who have means and gratitude, who care about this ministry deeply and have benefited from it greatly, who as they pray and consider how they might partner with us either, you know, on a regular monthly basis or one-time gifts, will actually cause this message to reach people that didn't even know that this was out there. And it's sort of by analogy what C.S. Lewis says in his famous book, The Four Loves on Friendship. You know, the one way to think about friendship is the thought that comes to us. You know, you too, I thought I was the only one.
There are other like-minded
people around the world that if they heard this philosophy, they would say, oh, those are my values. That's how I'm longing to raise my kids. And I didn't know this was a thing. You know, I didn't know that somebody had put a lot of time and thought and energy into this. I didn't know that people were banding together to support and encourage one another and doing something radical and doing things differently. That it's not just school at home, but it's something so much more sophisticated and enjoyable than that. So that's my hope for what the nonprofit status does, is the message can reach more people while also removing barriers for those without massive financial means to get the tools they need to hear the message and for what we're offering to be given away and to be accessible to more and more people. So Rachel, I know you've done a lot to get us to this point. You've done operational tasks, you know, you've done things that are not necessarily your favorite thing because you love the ministry and you love to serve and you're diligent. But we're on the cusp of something that will actually free you up to do more of the things you love and are good at, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I'm an idea machine, as Carol calls me. So I'm always generating ideas, dreams, imaginings that mostly can't get done. So yes, I have some things my sleeve that I hope to do. But yeah, as you alluded to a few minutes ago, I like to think that I came in the back door of this ministry because I literally walked into the back door of Carol's house. And so I didn't come into a seminar because I needed to homeschool my kid. I came in as a hungry teenager, basically, who was curious and intellectually, spiritually hungry. And Carol was available. And I, you know, we connected at the right time and the Lord provided. And so that was, I guess, almost 15 years ago soon.
So I'm kind of a daughter, but got adopted as a teenager. So I feel like the DNA got in the more organic way. And so I came to seminar for the first time, I think when I was 20, maybe. And so it was not high stakes for me. It was just a, oh yeah, this sounds like something I would have loved to experienced as a kid. Or yeah, this is how I learn now. Or this is the way that I, you know, want to continue learning. Or this would be great for when I do have a family one day. And then my husband was open to it when we did meet and get married. So it all worked out. But yeah, so it's
that would have been the end of that relationship.
Yeah, it would have been rough. We would have had to split one way or the other. You were him, so that would have been a hard decision. But yeah, so I feel like it's that Carol's work has been a boutique, and it's been in just more small, like you said, cottage industry, and this isn't an expansion so that we can lose the identity, because we're all still very much, you know, as Wendell Berry said, like, think little people. And that's a very important value for me personally and for all of us, that our local places are really important to us and our local people and the flourishing of those places. So it's not the desire to, you know, go big and think big and industrialize everything. But to me, it really is getting it into the hands of those people who can't. And really, those are the least of these. You know, like, I went into a woman's house one time. My pastor's wife and I were helping her. She was expecting twins, and she already had like 5 kids or something. And there were huge screens on the wall. And it just felt so oppressed when I went there. And it's like, to me, that's who this is for, because those people need that freedom and that deliverance. And so to me, it's like the expansion of it gives us opportunity for that kind of thing too.
That's a really great
illustration, Rachel, because it's a reminder that we live in an age where inequality is being talked about more and more, where people are wrestling with this idea of the haves and have-nots. How much is that a thing we should focus on? How much of that is something that is a distraction? And yet the truth of the matter is, no matter how you think about that dynamic, it's reading and it's this philosophy that lifts the ceiling for anybody, regardless of their income level, and regardless of you know, how they were raised or what kind of assets they've inherited from their family of origin. It really doesn't matter. You know, there's a way in which this taps so much into the most positive versions of the American dream, which is that if you work hard and stay humble, you know, good things can happen to you over time if you're patient. And homeschooling, in particular, this philosophy connects so beautifully to that. You know, the books in the home matter more than whether or not your parents went to college statistically. And whether your mom or dad read to you matters more than whether or not you had a private tutor. You know, so in fact, what we're doing is private tutoring, isn't it? So mm-hmm. So there is something so beautifully democratic that whatever obstacles you're trying to overcome, you know, whatever deprivations you experienced in your family of origin, this is a philosophy that's for you. This isn't for the elites. You know, this isn't just for people who have tons and tons of extra disposable income. This philosophy doesn't price you out in some ways. I understand there are challenges related to homeschooling in general and whether or not mom can stay home with the kids. But yet the irony is, so many of the people we meet are actually making great sacrifices in order to do that. And so therefore, by definition, they have less disposable income because they've chosen to stay home with their kids. And so they are doing some belt tightening, and maybe they're driving older cars and living in homes that aren't quite as Instagrammable because they're willing to invest more time and attention in their kids. And so again, I love that what we're offering them isn't, you know, sign here and we'll begin charging you $6,000 a year for our curriculum package. You know, we're actually offering them something that doesn't involve, you know, startup costs like a multi-level marketing scheme.
Mm-hmm. Well, JJ, when I think about Dr. Moore's slogan, I think it certainly fits into this seminar quite well. I mean, this chat we're having, that all you need to homeschool effectively is a Bible, a library card, and a math program. And that is a message that needs to never be lost, because I feel very often in the homeschool community that there are people, is it called hawkers, when you walk through like a circus and everyone's yelling at you, mm-hmm. you know, come over here, come see the fat, blah, 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 you know, whatever it is. And I feel that way sometimes in the homeschool community. I've always felt that way. But because I had Dr. Moore in my ear from day one, I rarely, the first few years I was buying things that after 2 weeks I hated, and they were very expensive hobbies that I was creating that didn't work out. But after a year or two, you grow in confidence and you're like, what did Dr. Moore say again? Oh yeah. And so I think, you know, equipping families that nobody needs to homeschool more than people who are financially straining. Like this, you know, mm-hmm. rich people can homeschool and that's great. But the average person who's struggling on one income or a single mom or something, this method is for you. And that is one of the beauties and the blessings of what we do, that you don't need all these bells and whistles. And I love to share about the young man who got a perfect SAT score when you were a little boy, JJ, and we're living in Huntington Beach. And Dr. Moore told us about it. He got a perfect 800 on his SAT, and they did some research and found out that this little boy was homeless and that he'd been living in his mother's car, that they were both homeless. And when they did more research, scratched under the surface, they found out, well, living in Southern California, what did they do every day? Well, it was hot. So they found a place that was clean, had nice bathrooms, and had air conditioning, the public library. And the little boy had spent every single day in the public library reading all the books, got a perfect score on his SAT. He wasn't, quote, homeschooling, unquote. He was homeless, hanging out in a public library all day. But it worked, and he became incredibly self-educated. And that's the beauty that we're, you know, always emphasizing, that Jesus said his yoke is easy and his burden is light. And so this method is easy and light if you do what we say. And we want to share that with the people who need it most, the people that are under duress, as King David's friends were, and gathering that tribe together and saying, you know, come follow us. It's going to be okay. We're going to make this really easy for you.
Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a paradox that lies at the heart of our ministry, which is this idea that, you know, as Rachel said so well, you know, we're trying to be faithful and die anonymous. You know, nobody here is trying to get famous. Nobody here is trying to gain internet notoriety. It's not really the way we roll. And yet the truth is, some of the families that embrace this philosophy are going to raise kids who are going to go on to do some really exceptional things by God's grace. Mm-hmm. And so there is a place for godly ambition. And, you know, if you read Constitution scholar Yuval Levin in his wonderful book, A Time to Build, he's going to say, yeah, you know, there are many foundations that are tottering in our society today. Institutions are crumbling. People are losing faith in institutions. There's legitimate institutional decay that is sometimes causing people to lose faith. There's sort of a spirit of anti-authority that's running through society that isn't always good and helpful. And so we've gotten better at tearing things down than building things. And the family is an institution. The local church is an institution. Schools are institutions. Churches are institutions. And these are all things that need to be strengthened if we're going to have a strong society. And so we can start at the cellular level, as some of the elders in my church have been saying. And I think they're right. You know, we can't save the world, but we can do the dishes. So we can, as P.G. O'Rourke said that famously, you know. Yeah, I think it was humorous P.G. O'Rourke who said, you know, everybody wants to save the world. Nobody wants to help mom with the dishes. But there's a beautiful invitation here to rebuild society at the cellular level, to start with the family and to start with the next generation that are in the nurseries of our churches, that are crawling on the carpet in our homes as you listen to this podcast.
And so we want to invest there. And so by doing something very quiet and seemingly undramatic, we can actually do something wildly significant. Mm-hmm. So there's the paradox. You know, we're trying to do something very local and small, and yet it has massive implications because the truth of the matter is some of the people that embrace this philosophy are going to raise future circuit court judges. Mm-hmm. They're going to raise future senators. They're going to raise future mayors. They're going to raise future titans of industry. They're going to raise future scholars and inventors. And that's going to be because this is a philosophy that actually fans curiosity into flame, that doesn't turn children into widgets, that gives kids time to be bored and therefore to discover what they're good at and what they like, that actually creates lifelong learners in ways we could never predict. And some of our kids that may have seemed unimpressive to us or unimpressive to their grandparents will go on to do great things in ways that will surprise us all because they were left alone with books and they were having a real childhood outside instead of stressing out and, you know, and trying to get homework assignments done or being taught to the test. So there are some really big things that will come out of this movement, not because we are trying to do big things, not because we are trying to raise rich and famous kids, but really because we are trying to raise kids to be good citizens and to have a strong moral backbone.
That's it. The main thing we're trying to do is help parents to disciple and mentor their children for the kingdom of God. And we didn't mention a wonderful goal is spiritual leaders and giants, people who will be missionaries, people who will be pastors, people who will lead mercy ministries and NGOs. And because our children are not, as you, JJ, always say, being pecked in the hen house, that they have time for their theology to develop and harden without having to fend off, you know, the pirates. They're in a safe place where their theology is being nurtured at home and then in their churches, hopefully. And these kids have spiritual confidence that children who've been pecked at are lacking. And so I think that's the biggest benefit. And as we like to say, we don't care if your child goes to Harvard. We just want to be sure they're going to heaven. And so getting that priority in place, not that you can't go to both, but putting that in priority, heaven first, then we'll talk about Harvard. So putting that spiritual formation front and center on everything that we do as families, as we are working on their character through service and work, and we're working on their intellect through great books. And so we're shaping and forming, you know, people that are going to be giants in God's kingdom. Of course, we think of the Arroyo children and their impact and their confidence, because their parents gave them unconditional love, cheered for them, helped them pursue their dreams. And we want to have, you know, kingdoms of these types of kids that are going to take the world by storm and be, you know, someday missionary books will be written about some of these kids. That's our dream. That's our goal. And I'm already seeing it happen with the children that are, you know, now, like JJ, your generation was the first generation. And I've seen so many fabulous kids at your age level come out of the homeschool movement and the things that they're doing and self-education and what that really looks like. And it's, we have a chance here to do something really great.
For listeners who don't know, my mom was mentioning the Arroyo family. I just got a text from David Arroyo earlier today, and he came late to this method. And so it's never too late if you're listening. And while his kids were in high school, they made some dramatic changes away from screens and towards books and embracing this philosophy. And it had a dramatic impact on the life of their family. And his kids did go on to Ivy League educations, and they're working in the tech sector, and they're all heavy hitters. But they're also calling their mom and dad to have gospel conversations every week. And they love the Lord, and they've got their priorities in order. They're great, great kids that anyone would be humbled to have raised. And David is a humble, godly man, and he's one of our board members. So that's a beautiful transition back into this idea of the nonprofit. You know, not all nonprofits are created equal. You know, I've talked to guys on boards who sigh and say, you know, our board hasn't been gathered for quite some time. You know, it can almost feel perfunctory. But we're blessed to have a really active board. And we want to do this right.
We have a
working board. This is an act of stewardship, you know. So we have a college law professor on our board. We have the CFO of a multi-billion-dollar company on our board, you know, who is a part of our compensation committee, our finance committee. We have really successful businessmen. We have wise women who've raised multiple kids to adulthood using this philosophy and have tons of experience. Women who have succeeded in business and have great wisdom in the home. And so when we put these men and these women in a room and they pray for this ministry and they offer us counsel and guidance and they look at the books and think about the future, we're blessed to know that this ministry now has people who share this DNA and have shared it for many decades now in the room with us asking, how do we reach the next generation? How do we make sure that the people that need to hear this message most are able to hear it? And that's such a privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And as you say, JJ, everyone on our board has raised their children with these methods. So this isn't just we looked around and saw who's got business savvy or something, but these are people who have tested this and believe in it and want to see it continue for their grandchildren.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, it's, you know, at some point we shouldn't beat around the bush, but we should ask people to prayerfully get out their metaphorical and literal checkbooks. If you go to homeschoolmadesimple.net/donate, you can see there that you can make a one-time gift of any amount. You can set up recurring giving. And frankly, for ministries like this that are dreaming and praying about expanding and taking on new projects that can serve and bless families, you know, a small amount given every month is actually far more significant than a large amount given once. And so it's as those things build up and everybody brings their two pennies, that we're able to do something together. You know, there are thousands and thousands of people who listen to this podcast and who have consulted and believe in this philosophy and some with great means, some with less means, but everybody's two pennies matter as we stack hands on this together. And so we'd ask you to prayerfully consider a recurring gift of even the smallest amount would make a huge difference as we budget and plan and seek to be prudent with the funds that come in so that we don't get over our skis. We always want to act our wage and be wise and be good stewards of what's been entrusted to us. One big thing coming down the pike is that my mom has realized it's probably finally time to write her first book. So, you know, that's most authors start in their 70s, right? You know, you know, a first book in your 70s has been done before. A River Runs Through It, which is a novella of 105 pages, for those of you who've read it. Some people are more familiar with the movie of the same name, but Norman McLean, who wrote it, taught Shakespeare for many years at the University of Chicago and didn't get around to writing his first book until he was in his 70s. So it's never too late to write a great first book. And so we're hoping that Carol can write something that will help make Dr. Moore famous again. Because as we pick up his book that's now sadly out of print, Better Late Than Early, which you can still sometimes get through Kindle and other digital means, the research in that book and the careful thought is as relevant as ever. But we need new books to carry on that message and to reintroduce people to the work of Dr. Raymond and Dorothy Moore. And so our hope is that as we transition to a nonprofit and my mom sets down some of her tasks, she can turn her hand to writing. And that's part of how institutions grow in maturity and sophistication as you transition from an oral to a written culture. Rachel has started creating some planning worksheets. I think one thing that's typical of any movement is that the founder helps people catch the vision and gets them moving. You know, hey, we need to climb that mountain over there and here's why it matters and it's worth it. And so you get everybody moving in that direction and then they need help lacing up their boots, you know, and you get down into the details of, hey, I've never been hiking before. I've never climbed up a mountain before. I'm sold. I'm in on the message. We got to climb that mountain. And then the hike gets difficult and people don't know how to put on a backpack and they get discouraged and they fall out. And so we're realizing that that's a real issue of stewardship at this season of the ministry's life is we have a lot of people who are bought in, but they either get overwhelmed or they need more help and guidance to not drop out. And if they don't get it in a timely way, sometimes they quit, not because of philosophical reasons, but because they're thinking to themselves, I wish I knew how, or I wish there was somebody to show me. So Rachel is uniquely gifted in creating the kinds of tools that demystify this philosophy for people and put the cookies down on the shelf. My wife is similarly wired, where she believes wholeheartedly in the vision, but she's going, I'm going to need someone to kind of draw this out for me. You know, I need to, something I can see and touch. Mm-hmm. So that's something that will be increasingly happening as we create tools and resources, not to put people in a box or to tell you exactly how to do it, because every family is going to figure out their own unique way to do this. That's part of the beauty of it. No fingerprints are alike, and no family is going to homeschool identically. And yet, people are longing for tools. People are longing for resources that will make this feel less ethereal, less overwhelming, more concrete. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of things that we're longing to put our hands to and build in this next season.
Yep. It's like in design, you've got to know the rules before you break them. But if you know the rules, then you can intentionally now, well, I'm going to break the rule of thirds because it looks, it's not doing what I want it to. But then when people don't know like what the rules are, what the boundaries are, what am I supposed to be doing, then they feel lost and you're, you know, you don't know why you're doing anything. You don't know why something's working or why it's not working. But then when you can like reference those rules, then you can know, well, that rule isn't working for this design. And so I'm going to break it. And then you feel empowered to make that decision rather than just willy-nilly throwing things places and hoping it looks okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we want to give people lots of freedom, but we also want to give them clarity and confidence. And you know, if we can get that mix right, I think more people are going to not quit, you know, and not drop out when it gets hard or it gets overwhelming or it feels fuzzy. So we hope that you've enjoyed hearing about this massive transition in the life of our ministry after decades of walking alongside families across the country and across the world. And we hope that this next season is even more fruitful and brings God even more glory. So that link again is homeschoolmadesimple.net/donate. homeschoolmadesimple.net/donate. We would ask all of you to pray for us, for great wisdom and discernment, for stewardship of the resources that are entrusted to us, and that the families that the Lord wants to hear this message would hear this message and be enabled to more faithfully and fruitfully disciple their kids for the glory of God. That's our heart here. And as the Lord moves you to partner with us financially, we say thank you ahead of time for your generosity, your support, and your gratitude over all of these years that we've walked together.
You've been listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or share this episode with a friend. It means so much when you help us spread the message of Homeschool Made Simple with others. Thanks for joining us this week on the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. Remember, Jesus' commandments are not burdensome. What he calls you to do, he will enable you to do. Blessings.